discuss the findings is Colby Spencer, a senior analyst at Lansing's Anderson Economic Group and a co-author of the report. Welcome to the program, Colby.
Thank you, Mike.
So you looked at both Governor Snyder's new international trade crossing plan and Matty Maroon's, who owns the Detroit International Bridge Company's proposal to build a twin for the Ambassador Bridge. Let's start with the size and scope of each project. How do the construction of these bridge projects compare?
Well, in the first finding of our report is that the NITC project is a much larger construction project than the twinning of the Ambassador Bridge as proposed by the Detroit International Bridge Company. Now, in the proposal, the NITC includes not just an additional bridge, but also additional connections to Highway 401 in Canada, Highway 75 in the U.S., and additional customs toll booths on both sides, whereas the DIBC proposal currently looks at just twinning the bridge and using current infrastructure for those entrances.
Is there any particular advantage in that structure of building a whole new setup versus using the twin aspect?
Yes. When we looked at this project, we sort of were trying to figure out the motivation between both projects and what were the reasoning behind a project like this. And the NITC addresses congestion problems, and that's one of the big things that's happening between Detroit and Canada, is there's a lot of truck congestion going across the border. And as we are each other's number one trading partners, that's the problem that the bridge needs to address. It's not necessarily a bridge that's needed. It is additional customs capacity to allow for that congestion problem.
And when it comes to the cost difference, then, how big of a difference is there in terms of the cost of each project?
The cost difference actually is very large, but that, of course, goes along with the first finding in that the NITC project is a much larger project and has much more infrastructure involved, and obviously, because more infrastructure, it costs more.
Now, the congestion issue is an interesting one because the Maroon family released data that show that traffic was down on the Ambassador Bridge, arguing against the construction of this second bridge altogether. How big of a factor will that be in terms of the cost of these and paying for these projects if traffic actually is nowhere near what lawmakers are expecting it to be?
That actually is a very, very big concern, and we do address this in our report. Their traffic estimates are really difficult to do properly. They can, looking at our report, you can see that they vary widely to being extremely underestimated to 86% overestimated from what they normally would be in reality. And unfortunately, without knowing a minimal level of traffic needed to make either project financially viable, it's really hard to tell. Now, we can say that the traffic level needed to make the Detroit Bridge Company's project viable would be lower because they would have the option of closing one of the bridges and operating only one. Whereas with the NITC, that would be directly competing with the Ambassador Bridge, so you couldn't necessarily close one and continue to gain a profit.
Your study found that the traffic volume would have a direct impact on the tolls the drivers would pay, specifically on the NITC. How much more could drivers have to pay if the volumes are not there and the NITC is built?
That's something that we didn't have enough data to really analyze fully. The legislation, Senate Bill 410, where this is outlined, does give the authority that would be operating the bridge, it gives them the ability to increase toll rates so that the revenues can match what would be required to pay the bonds. However, it would stand to reason that they wouldn't increase so exorbitantly as to make someone's choice between, the NITC bridge versus the Ambassador Bridge so stark that they would obviously choose the Ambassador because it was that much less expensive. It would most likely be a matter of convenience.
I'm talking to Colby Spencer, a senior analyst at Lansing's Anderson Economic Group and a co-author of a report that compares these two projects, the Maroon family's twin bridge to the Ambassador and the Governor Snyder-backed new international trade crossing plan. Now, Colby, you indicated in the report that the International Trade Crossing Project offers benefits to taxpayers in the form of over $2 billion in federal money for the highway project. Can you explain how that funding is available?
Sure. So initially, when this project first came to fruition under Governor Granholm's administration, Transport Canada and the Government of Canada, which Transport Canada is like our Department of Transportation, offered to help Michigan fund the project because our finances were not quite as liquid as theirs. And there was a letter written saying that they would offer up to $550 million to Michigan to use. Now, this was obviously reaffirmed to Governor Snyder recently, and Ray LaHood, who's the Secretary of Transportation here in the U.S., said that that money can be used as federal matching dollars. And now the Federal Department of Transportation has a program where a state can give 20% of an amount, and the federal government will match 80% of that. So, of course, using basic math, we've got $550 million from Canada that we can use to leverage an additional $2.2 billion from the federal government to use on Michigan's highways. And this is money that we wouldn't otherwise get because the state simply doesn't have it.
I see. And this money could be used on things other than the bridge project itself. Now, would some of it have to be required to be used on the bridge project at all or not so?
Nope. It's that those funds can be used on the bridge project. They are part of funds within the Michigan Department of Transportation. However, they could also be used to fund other highway projects around the state.
Supporters of the new international trade crossing have indicated that Michigan taxpayers will not have to pay for the project whatsoever, won't be liable for it. Is that, in fact, guaranteed?
It is, as long as there are specific statutory requirements in place in the legislation, and we outline this in our report. According to the legislation, if the toll-setting entity is the bridge authority, then the Government of Canada has offered to step in and back the bonds, which means that if traffic revenues are too low and the tolls are simply not enough to pay bondholders, then the Government of Canada will fill that gap so that the bonds can be paid in a timely manner. Now, that's something that needs to, you know, taxpayers do need to pay attention to that in the final statute. Now, the repayment of the $550 loan, because that Canadian contribution is a loan, that loan document would also need to specifically state that it's only payable by toll revenues and not liable for the taxpayers of Michigan. So as long as that's specifically stated, then taxpayers are, in fact, protected.
When you talk about the fact that the new international trade crossing would allow for less of a bottleneck in traffic and would provide us with over $2 billion of additional federal money for our own highways, that sure makes that project look superior to the Maroon family's option. Is there any reason not to go that route?
Well, our report really wasn't trying to look at one project in favor of another. The goal of it was to present as much information as possible with what was publicly available to contribute to the current debate and to inform taxpayers of the different options and what that means. So for a person who's concerned solely on cost, obviously there's a cheaper option. For a person who's concerned about trade and commerce, there's another option. So there's sort of pros and cons to both projects depending on what angle you come from.
And having looked closely at the plans that exist, or at least the new international trade crossing plan, does it appear that it's detailed and prepared enough to proceed, or is there a little more work that might need to be done on that before it begins?
Well, looking at the plans, because the legislation has not been passed, there has not been a contract for a design and build organization to come in and design this bridge and build it. All the regulations have been passed already for environmental permits. Those have already been acquired for that location. But in terms of legislation itself, that needs to be passed, obviously, before someone can be contracted to design and build a bridge. But the legislation itself, as long as it has the statutory requirements to protect taxpayers, then I'd say it's ready to go.
Finally, the traffic, that just as you said, there's such a lack of real visibility into the future as to how much traffic we're going to have. Does that leave us basically having to guess if we are going to actually have the traffic needed to make this project worthy?
Yes, unfortunately it does. The traffic estimates that we were able to find, as you can see from our report, we've done an analysis on it, and because we don't know the final cost of either project, it's difficult to say what the threshold level of traffic would be in order to pay that back, because you kind of need all of those unknowns to make that equation work. But because traffic estimates are so unreliable, it really is kind of a shot in the dark and sort of going on faith with either project of what you think would benefit Michigan overall the most.
Colby Spencer, a senior analyst at Lansing's Anderson Economic Group, and the co-author of this new report that takes a look at both the new international trade crossing plan backed by Governor Snyder and Republicans, some Republicans, and the Matty Maroon family plan to build a twin next to the Ambassador Bridge. Thank you for joining me, Colby.
Thank you so much.